So it is my pleasure to introduce our next speakers. First up is Stephen Betchell. If patients' groups could have a hero, Stephen would be at the top of our list. His dedication and tireless efforts to make life better for HAE patients and for PID patients and to tackle the really difficult issues is inspiring. He's head of CHAIN, which is the physician-patient group for hereditary angioedema, and he's a strong advocate for the need for comprehensive care for our patient base. So, Stephen.
Thank you, Della. And I just want to clarify, I did not set up CHAIN, but I did take over from Tom Bowen. I was instrumental in forming a board of directors and incorporating it, but Tom Bowen deserves the credit for setting up CHAIN. So what I'd like to do is talk about, we've heard a lot about how comprehensive care models have worked, and some are working very well within Canada. Things are working well outside of Canada. We wouldn't be having this meeting today if it was working well everywhere within Canada. So what I'd hope to do over the next 20 minutes or so is to go over and to review the current recommendations for comprehensive care specifically for HAE in Canada, to show what we've achieved and what still needs work, and to propose and discuss strategies to accomplish some of these unmet needs. As mandatory as part of any talking that I do for the University of Toronto, there must be a declaration of potential conflict of sources of funding. These are ones listed either in the past or currently from funding received for either advisory boards, consultancies, speakers, honoraria, or research funding that may overlap with topics under discussion today. So what is my role? And I have, in this capacity today, I'm wearing two hats. One that I'm not going to really talk about, unless we have it as a bit of a side discussion, is primary immune deficiency. And that occupies most of my time, just based on prevalence and the setup of the clinic. So I'm the director of one of the largest adult primary immune deficiency clinics in Canada, mostly common variable immune deficiency. I'm not going to talk about that part today. That's going to come, David's going to speak a bit about that and comprehensive care. The other hat that I wear is as the chair of CHAIN, as Della alluded to. And what is CHAIN? So CHAIN is a physician organization that's been active for over a decade. Tom Bowen started it. It's something that was formally incorporated. We have an executive director, Peter Waite, who's in the audience here today. And most of the focus has been on guideline development, but also on research as well. So the vision of CHAIN has been to enable HAE patients in Canada to receive appropriate support and care so that they are able to live full lives. The mission statement of CHAIN is that CHAIN unites physicians committed to ensuring all HAE patients in Canada have access to excellent care that reflects current management and treatment guidelines and works to promote research and education. So how have we done that? And this is the most recent iteration of the guideline. It's mostly been through the development of guidelines going back to the initial one more than a decade ago. And many of the people in this room have contributed both nationally and internationally to development of the guidelines. The Canadian guideline is not something I'm going to go over today, but it was broken up into categories of how to treat acute attacks, prophylaxis, short-term and long-term, which Dr. Chakardi had alluded to earlier on, self-administration, both for prophylaxis and acute treatment, approach to individualized therapy, so when to step up and step down and reevaluate patients who are on treatment, focusing on quality of life, and also on comprehensive care. And we felt it was very important to have comprehensive care in this guideline as a separate entity, but it does involve all of the ones above as well. Was it unique? No. There are many guidelines, as mentioned earlier, focusing on HAE. And many of, if not all of these guidelines, comment on the need for comprehensive care. There's one that's currently been submitted to publication, the updated World Allergy Organization HAE guideline, which also emphasizes the importance of comprehensive care. So what is comprehensive care? And the World Allergy Organization defines it as comprehensive care of patients is based on the integration of the organization, delivery, and management of services related to diagnosis, treatment, care, rehabilitation, and health promotion. And I think what's key in this, and it was alluded to earlier by Dr. Pai, is the integration. And I really like the puzzle here. All these pieces need to be integrated in order to form comprehensive care. And although we may have some centers, and our center may be one of them along with others, where we may have elements of the comprehensive care model, but it may not be integrated and it may not complete the full puzzle that's being recommended. So what about the actual recommendation when it came to comprehensive care? It was very easy to write this. It's quite another thing to implement it. And the recommendation was that comprehensive care should be available for all patients with HAE. What about the level of evidence? Like we heard this morning, a level of evidence for comprehensive care is low at best. We've had to extract, and this is one of the things we're working on for the next guideline meeting, how to extrapolate data from other care models to see if they are applicable to our care model. But I'm also very excited to see with what Marco and Mark are talking about moving forward, an excellent opportunity to capture data that can show the improvement of care, either quality of life, treatment of attacks, early treatment of attacks, to mitigate need and reliance on other healthcare professionals, resources such as emergency rooms, to help support this recommendation moving forward and hopefully get funding to facilitate this in Canada in a more comprehensive way. So this is a very wordy slide. I'm going to go through it, and I thought it was important to put in, but this is verbatim from the guideline. So the first statement, although the importance of comprehensive care model in HAE was recognized by the committee unanimously, and specific recommendations have existed with respect to its requirements, this care model is not available to all patients with HAE in Canada. We've heard where it can work very well in some centers, and some centers that have no access to comprehensive care. Provincial and territorial model of healthcare funding makes implementation of national uniform HAE comprehensive care clinics challenging. And I think Della had raised this earlier. The structure of the provincial healthcare system does not mean that every model for comprehensive care may work in a national way. This, I would think, is a challenge. It's not a barrier, and that's why we're here today to see how we might implement some of these other structures or some of these other organized approach to comprehensive care and how they might work in individual provinces or territories. So despite this, the fundamentals of comprehensive care should be uniform across the country and equally accessible across all geographic regions. And that's fundamental. And given the sparsity of our population, the broad geographic scope, it's important to be able to tie in recommendations for care in HAE, and not only HAE, but also PID, and has been done in hemophilia and other rare blood disorders, so people have access to the same level of expertise no matter where they live. And I'm going to talk a bit about what we're doing to try to bridge that as well. So support should be provided by provincial and territorial governments to ensure that proper standards of care are being met. We feel very strongly about that. It's a taxpayer-funded system, and the benefits back to the patient, the benefits to the patient are clear, and we would hope to show the benefits back to the payers why comprehensive care is making a difference in improving quality of life, but also improving the treatment of HAE specifically. Treatment for HAE can be expensive, we know that. However, inappropriate treatment of HAE may be even more costly. It's going to be very important to collect some of the economic data, the pharmacoeconomic data, to help support that, especially with respect to visits to emergency rooms, unnecessary treatments, admissions to intensive care units, when they could have been avoided with appropriate treatment. It was recognized by the committee that ongoing monitoring of comprehensive care programs is essential to measure the impact on patients' outcomes, such as disease control, quality of life, and economic effects. And again, I think once comprehensive care is in place, it's going to be very important to show back to the payers that it's making a difference. And Marco, I don't think, talked about it today, but there has been discussion about when a center calls himself either a center of excellence or a center providing comprehensive care, there's a way to audit that. That it has certain criteria must be met before you can hang that shingle, but not just hang the shingle, make sure that you update it and you're keeping it current in order to be called the comprehensive care system or a clinic. So the guideline actually has a table. It's more parts of this table, but I just want to focus on this because it really focuses on the best clinical treatment outcomes, and they include, now can I see this one? A comprehensive care team made up of nurse coordinator, clinician, social worker, data management, pain management specialist, genetic counselor, and administrative support. I think we've heard that theme over and over today, the common elements of comprehensive care. And so what about our clinic at St. Michael's Hospital, which again is primarily a primary immunodeficiency clinic, but because many patients with HAE were not being treated by any other specialty, and we had similar issues with respect to being a rare disease and the requirement or the need to rely on some blood products to treat HAE, it fell under our group. thing about St. Michael's Hospital, it's a quaternary center with a number of specialties available. So we have access to non-CF bronchiectasis clinics, GI clinics that focus on primary immune deficiency, infectious diseases, hematology, and we have excellent blood bank support in transfusion medicine as well. It acts as a training center for pediatric and adult specialties, which is very important for primary immune deficiency. We have a liaison with the Hospital for Sick Children, where patients in primary immune deficiency transfer over to facilitate ongoing care. We've not had that that liaison with HAE as yet, but certainly something we're working on. Nurses are focused but not exclusive. So we've had, and I think some of the patients in the audience today have witnessed how good the care has been when the nurses in the clinic are focused and are familiar with primary immune deficiency. The same would apply for HAE in some cases. We tried to get this going in early stages, but it didn't materialize. So what about the dedicated sources of support? It's ambitious to look after a rare disease. There are a number of elements that come into this, so it requires support. And what level of support did we get? And that's pretty much what we got. And it's true, and I think it was mentioned by Marco earlier, that when there's a will and an interested physician or team, that things start to happen. And this happened despite not having any formal structured support program in place. And why was it important? Because we've lost things. We've lost the primary two things, a dedicated clinic space. So the hospitals are moving towards a hoteling model, and this may be similar in other areas of Ontario, other areas of the country, other areas of the world, where the clinic space is being dictated by the need. And so it's a pitch for a need and providing a space, but there's no fixed space for a patient group, which is very challenging when you're dealing with rare diseases. When you're dealing with asthma, with type 2 diabetes, with hypertension clinics, the number of patients is much higher. It sustains a very populated hotel and a resort, as opposed to the Super 8 hotel that gets the occasional patient to check in. Nurses are focused but not exclusive. We've lost that. So, and Whitney has seen this firsthand in our centers. So we had nurses who were familiar with primary immune deficiencies. They went to the IDF. They were familiar with infusion techniques, why it's different to treat someone with replacement therapy in PID versus immunomodulatory therapy in inflammatory conditions. They were aware of that. Now the focus is to generic nursing, so any nurse should be able to treat multiple conditions, so it's easier for scheduling to fit into the hoteling model. And it's had an impact on our ability to provide services for PID, and that has impacted our ability to provide services for HA patients as well. Access to the specialized diagnostic testing, again, this is important. It's part of the certainly part of what an accredited program should have in HA and certainly PID as well. We're not going to get into the issues around providing appropriate diagnostic testing with PID, but there are similar, if not more challenging, issues at play there. So we do have a laboratory committee within CHAIN, and we convened a survey to find out what the landscape of the accessibility of diagnostic testing was across the country and from center to center. It's currently being finalized for publication now. What we learned from that is it's quite disparate across the country. Some centers have access to everything that you would need, a C4, a C1 inhibitor level and function, the appropriate functional assay, the appropriate functional assay to make the diagnosis. There are some areas where they could only get specific tests. So in British Columbia, for instance, you can get a C4 and a C1 inhibitor functional level, but you can't get a C1 inhibitor antigenic level. In Ontario, if you're at an academic center, an academic center for sure, some hospitals, you can get access to C4, C1 inhibitor, and C1 inhibitor functional level covered, but the functional level that was being done with an assay that probably wasn't the best assay. It was actually more expensive to perform that test than to perform the accurate or a better test. If you're in private practice, it changes completely. So you can get a C4 level and a C1 inhibitor antigenic level covered, but you have to pay for the functional assay. If you have third-party insurance, that would be covered. If you don't, you're out of pocket the $85 to do that. So I credit to Susan Wasserman, who signed up to come today, but unfortunately she couldn't make it. She grabbed this bull by the horns, and she was able to at least get the lab in Ontario, to which the samples are sent, to switch over to the chromogenic assay. The next step, which is actually the same price, if not cheaper than the antigenic assay through the lab that's performing it, will be to get to see if we can have transfer of funding to the functional assay rather than the inhibitor. So a long way to say it's not an even landscape to make the diagnosis throughout the country, even throughout the province. So access to home treatment. So access to home treatment has been important for the management of HA, certainly in PID as well. I think we've gone from when home therapy or home treatment or medical therapy was much more common in the past. We've institutionalized it, but now we're moving more therapy into the home. And in 2014, the Ontario government, and was very happy to see this, so putting patients at the center, the right care, the right place, and the right time, so continuing to expand home and community care to ensure that people receive care as close to home as possible. And this was very good timing in 2014. Of the two diseases that I treat, HA especially, treatment in the home imperative in order to reduce the morbidity and mortality that's associated with the condition, but also in primary immune deficiency to help improve patients' quality of life, to improve compliance as well. So it was very timely. And it was timely, and Bruce had alluded to this earlier, the study that we did, and it was published in 2014, around the same time, with modeling done to show the implication to payers to switch from hospital-based IV therapy to home-based subcutaneous immunoglobulin therapy in patients with both primary and secondary immunodeficiency. So it was good timing. Again, this study and the other ones that Bruce showed were based on economic modeling. What we have done was we've just recently had accepted for press in the Annals of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology is a prospective study done over a year looking at direct nursing time as well as hospital costs for providing IVIG therapy. So where are we at now? And this was very, very... I was very happy to see this, and this was the Health Quality Ontario through the Ontario Health Technology Advisory Committee. They looked, and I was impressed with the detail that they went to in both assessing the pharmacoeconomic implications of switching from IVIG to home therapy for immunoglobulin products, but also the clinical importance of that change in the quality of life of patients. And their recommendation, which was made back in the, I believe, in the end of September, was that OTAC recommends that home-based subcutaneous infusion of immunoglobulin be publicly funded for treatment of patients with primary and secondary immunodeficiencies. That went out to a public forum for comment. I understand that's being finalized. So that is being finalized after public input, and we're waiting to see what the final recommendation would be. I know I'm up here supposed to be talking about HAE, but I think this sets the important precedent in order to transfer care in a similar model, if this is accepted, for HAE. And the important thing was that I think that made a difference. And in reviewing the report, we had pharmacoeconomic data, we had societal data to show that you could make an impact with those changes. So what about a network? A networked patient information system to facilitate product recalls, collection of data on therapy, outcome measures, and safety, and facilitate participation in clinical trials. We don't really have a patient information system. I know registries, we've been looking and talking about registries for a long time in Canada for HAE specifically, but there are blood banks that do facilitate some of these, particularly around product recall, but we don't really look at therapy outcomes, and I think that's going to be imperative for HAE. Access to clinical advances as they become available. I think we're very fortunate in Canada. We do have access to therapies. In fact, we're at the point now where we have so much access, the cost of the therapies and the impact that can have on our economy is being considered. But we're quite fortunate to have those, and I think that's why we're here today, to figure out how we can make that work. Access to 24-hour support. And again, this is very specific for HA, likely not so relevant for PID. But we don't have that, and it's very challenging to provide that uniformly. We do have an on-call service at St. Michael's Hospital. There's an allergist always on call, so if you happen to be a patient of our center, you can reach somebody. That's not the same, and that's not uniform throughout. We have some centers, as Bruce mentioned, in Edmonton, and I believe, and David may speak to this, in Quebec, where there's on-call service all the time. 24/7 access to call and care and advice is not the same as having the emergency room open 24 hours a day so patients can receive their care there. for many reasons, cost reasons, inappropriate care, et cetera, and it's not synonymous. So what about, again, this goes back to the fundamentals of comprehensive care should be uniform across the country and equally accessible across all geographic regions. I can't speak for all the reasons. I can speak for Ontario. One of the things that we do have set up at St. Michael's is telemedicine, so I'm able to tap in. I can see patients across Ontario. They don't need to come in. They dial in. There's a nurse at that center, and we can go through management without being physically present. It saves a lot of time on travel. We talked about 7-8 hours of travel in Saskatchewan, and it's equally as long, if not longer, to come down from Northern Ontario down to Toronto or some of the other centers. One of the things that I've also done is there's a recognized need. We mentioned, I think Newfoundland was, I can't remember who mentioned Newfoundland earlier on, but Newfoundland has pediatric immunologists and allergists. They have no adult allergist. So I actually got a license in the province of Newfoundland to facilitate telemedicine in that province for adult patients that they were having some issues sorting out, not just for HA, but also for PID, for non-bradykinin-mediated angioedema, and other conditions as well, where they just felt more comfortable running it by an adult an internist. So again, I know this was coming up. Mark had raised a question, how do we facilitate that? Well, you know, it is challenging. I did have to get a license in Newfoundland. I couldn't do it without it. But it does work well. I think patients, we did collect some quality of life data. And believe it or not, if we even look at carbon footprint and the impact it's had by not having patients travel down, and it has shown that it's beneficial. However, I'm supported for this now. I have administrative support to facilitate that. I tell the patients to book in. It happens. It's my understanding that's going to be whittled away as well, where the administrative support is now going to fall back on us as individual physicians to help support this model. And that's not one that would be easily attainable. Access to up-to-date standards of care, including standardized wallet cards, as an example. And again, being in Canada and having access to the guidelines, a good cohesive physician group, a good cohesive patient group to enable the transference of recommendations between physicians, caregivers, and the patients. So tracking and intermittent audit of quality outcomes, including beneficial and adverse outcomes through secure, comprehensive, and network data management. It sounds like a very long way to say registry. And so we've seen the benefits of registries now in Italy and expanding throughout Europe. For the HAEIA-funded registry in the U.S. as well. I do believe that it should be disease-specific. I think there are metrics that you're going to collect that are going to be important specifically for either PID or HAE to come back to the funders for sustainability. And again, as I mentioned, so very specific to HAE, diagnostics, genetics, attack specifics and triggers, treatments, response to treatments, and quality of life should all be pooled and data extracted or be able to extract that data from a registry. Collect data that enables calculation of socioeconomic impact, again, for sustainability, and to track product utilization for measures of efficacy, safety, and accountability. And we heard Bruce mention the importance of CHARMS, and now I'm going to blank on the CBDR registry, I believe, Bruce, CBDR registry, and how that could be worked. Sorry, it's not, it's like a registry. But it doesn't have all the elements that would relate specifically to HA, but there's no reason that couldn't be a component of a registry to get back to do to tracking, as Bruce mentioned earlier on. So in summary, comprehensive care is not new, and it's not unique to rare diseases. I think we've gathered that today. A lack of standardization between rare blood disorders, despite some common themes. That treatments continue to evolve and move from regimented hospital-based therapies to home-based therapies. The recognition of this is expanding and is being slowly embraced, I believe, and I think that will change as we move forward. Despite this, there is no coordinated effort to track appropriate utilization of products and their efficacy, particularly as they move out of the hospital setting and into the home. And comprehensive care clinics could manage this with appropriate support that would likely be cost-effective, and I do hope that we can show that moving forward. So what about bridging this gap? And it's meetings like this, I think, that are so important. So they bring in what was currently recommended. We can write these guidelines, but without the knowledge translation and the uptake of that care, it does not necessarily reflect reality. Meetings like this bring together the healthcare providers nationally and internationally. We have patients and the advocate groups as well, and the policymakers and purse holders to hopefully bring this tenuous gap together. Thank you.